Welcome to a Stanlib podcast. I'm Dave Watson, investment specialist at Stanlib. Today I'm talking to Marius Oberholzer, head of Stanlib's multi-asset business. We're going to spend a couple of minutes reflecting on the quarter that's recently passed, as well as a couple of minutes looking at the team's outlook and positioning.
South African assets haven't done as well, but that follows on from an incredible fourth quarter. The view around risks and the sentiment for risk assets was pretty blown out with interest rates or forecasted interest rates being pretty high. And that return profile has continued in the first part of this year, although, as I mentioned, South African assets have not enjoyed that benefit to the same degree, given a number of events that we have coming up. We had the budget, obviously, through the course of this quarter and the announcement of Jafakra, which is something new to most people's terminology, as well as the looming elections in South Africa, which I think is safe to say a really important milestone in our evolution of a democracy and in terms of capital markets, given the last few years, and the foreign policy eventuations that have or migrations that have taken place. So overall, I think a really good asset market, but macro risk remains really high. We wrote about this at the end of the year, that we felt that interest rates in the US, specifically the forecasted interest rates, had become too dovish. The market was expecting too many interest rate cuts in the US, and I think at the time of writing, we said that the market was forecasting 7 interest rate cuts at this point in time. We're down to sort of 3 over the ensuing 12 months. So as interest rates cuts are being priced out of the market, we're fully expecting markets to digest that change in the cost of capital structure. Of course, that's not necessarily bearish. It's fairly decent when growth holds up, and at the moment, all the data is pointing to a decent growth environment, notwithstanding that inflation remains fairly sticky, as our chief economist Kevin Lings keeps talking to us about the stickiness and that's the final pathway down to the sort of 2% target that central bankers around the world are targeting. But, you know, interest rates work with a lag, and therefore nothing moves in a straight line. And it remains to be seen how markets will react to these policy responses as we get more data and as we get closer guidance to the June rate cut that the market currently is hoping for. We don't believe that that's necessarily the case, and therefore we are on like a cat on hot tin roof managing risk as opposed to being outright bullish on markets. That's not to say we're bearish. We're just managing risk. That's the DNA of the team.
If we go then to, I guess, the more tricky side of things, and we shift from reflections to outlook, I mean, what would you say are some of the things that are currently keeping you and the team up at night regards to risk in the markets?
Dave, look, there are always risks in the market, right? And there are always opportunities in the market. I think the big thing for us is, as I mentioned slightly earlier, is just, you know, what is the pathway to this interest rate environment look like? We do think that the cost of capital has peaked. To some degree, and that should give markets some form of tailwind. But we now have to move from a macro environment into a more micro environment, that earnings actually start coming through. And evidence is that earnings will come through. The fourth quarter in the United States and around the world, the earnings have been pretty decent. And despite the fact that Japan, for instance, and Europe were both in technical recessions, or Germany more specifically in a technical recession, those asset markets have continued to power on and deliver decent returns. But we do want to see returns coming through in earnings now. We do also think that the confidence level generated by a peak in the cost of capital, as evidenced by the Fed and the European Central Bank talking about peak rates and their next move to cut rates, will lead to higher activity in the mergers and acquisitions space. Buybacks will improve, potential dividend payouts will improve, and that all makes a reasonably fertile environment for equity investors, and slightly more challenging for fixed income investors or sovereign bonds anyway. But ultimately, we do want to see those earnings come through. And we do think that they will come through. It's just a question of how the markets digest this high interest rate environment relative to those previously very dovish outlooks that interest rate markets had. So overall, I think we, as I mentioned, we're managing risk, but we are constructive on markets, we think that equities will do well, although it's going to be sporadic. I don't think it will be moving in a straight line. We've already had very, very good returns on a year-to-date basis and almost double what you would typically get from developed market equities at this point in the cycle. So overall, equities are priced a lot, and that opens up two-way risk that we need to navigate. It's very easy to have a view on where markets go, but part of our job as portfolio managers is managing the pathway of returns to deliver a smoother return profile for investors and take advantage of the opportunity set that come about in a multi-asset world.
I mean, Marius, as we know, despite the risk, there are always opportunities to be had somewhere in markets. So, you know, opposite to my prior question is, you know, what would you say is sort of getting you out of bed in the morning? What is making you excited in markets in terms of opportunities that you guys are seeing?
Well, I think the first thing to say, Dave, is that, you know, with this perspective that I think is gaining more and more airtime in the markets, that inflation's not necessarily a one-way bet. What we have been enjoying is exposure to commodity type assets. So the first part would be that, you know, we injected a fairly decent position, I would suggest, in oil type securities back end of last year. That was really as an upside hedge to oil prices going crazy given the Middle Eastern situation. And that is in the early part of the quarter was a little bit disappointing, but certainly came home in the back end of the quarter and delivered decent returns for the portfolios. And similarly in gold, where typically we've not really wanted to play in that barbellic relic of an asset class. But we have had exposure to gold. So the inflationary type of impulses that we're seeing in gold and oil for different reasons, but then is starting to feed through into the rest of the commodity complex as China seems to be improving at the margin from an economics perspective and a much more decent support outlook from the policymakers in China who will ultimately drive returns in the equity markets in that country. But with an increased sort of positive outlook in China, that could migrate into emerging markets where there's really been apathy broadly from an investor's perspective, notwithstanding that individual countries have done relatively well. But that look through into South Africa is obviously very important for us as an equity investor as well as a fixed income investor, where our bonds are obviously risk assets as well. But as we think China improves, so we think the South African situation will improve from a market returns perspective. And then that sort of leads us into a confluence of factors, both the Chinese emerging markets, a bottoming in the global manufacturing cycle at the same time that those South African elections are coming about. So we do think valuations in South Africa are reasonably supportive, but we must understand that they don't operate in a vacuum, both globally as well as from our cost of capital perspective. And our bonds are suffering slightly with the backing up of yields in the United States. But overall, returns should be decent for SA investors, depending on what the election outlook or the election result is and what coalition politics looks like in the next few months.
For the insights. And I mean, many of our clients are aware of the extent to which you and your team engage with JP Morgan Asset Management. And maybe you can touch on a couple of areas where you feel on a day-to-day basis, you know, your team are benefiting from our strategic partnership there.
Yeah, look, I think it's an important component in terms of our value add for clients. You know, part of the design of the team over the last sort of 10 years as I've managed the business and the investment team here in the multi-asset space has been around getting different insights. And JP Morgan have been part of that since we started working closely together with them in sort of early 2020. They are part of our investment process. They are part of our investment team. That's how we think about them. And therefore, the engagements that we do have with them are fairly robust and as they would be between one of my portfolio managers and I, or different portfolio managers. They sit in our tactical asset allocation meeting. And I think the depth that they bring from a research perspective to the team and the insights that they can give us, given the depth of that JP Morgan investment team and the size of that investment team, is something that really does set us apart from peers, which means that when we're seeing opportunities in markets or risks in markets, we can really, if we feel that we need to improve our knowledge base in certain aspects, we can really dig into that given the breadth of that research capability that they have and the specialists that they are able to access, be it on the ground in China, be it in Latin America, be it in fixed income, or more specifically, where we're seeing sort of opportunities in credit markets. You know, we can approach things from a top-down perspective, but being able to blend that top-down with real depth of insight at a bottom-up level is really an advantage. You know, and we're a team of 11, and we draw on a lot of Stanlib insights as well. But if you think around the size of that JP Morgan capability that we can bring to bear, we should really be able to find opportunities for our clients or tilt away from risks that we think are growing in the market. And as an example, you know, it's never one-way traffic. It's not like JP Morgan point the way and we follow it all. And we were very early in certain risks that we identified in 2022 and 2023, and more recently in the back end of 23 and 24, they've really kept us involved in risk assets probably a little bit more than we would have been if we'd just been sitting on our own within the Stanlib cohort and within our own team. So it really is an advantage, and I think the relationship is growing, it continues to grow, as with any team that's been operating together now for just over 4 years. And we continue to enjoy our interactions with the guys. Importantly, they're good people. It's something that we pride ourselves on in Stanlib is doing business and interacting with people that are good people.
Yeah, Marius, I think to your point with the JP Morgan partnership, it's certainly a partnership that we, you know, feeling positive impacts across the business for our clients. So Marius, lastly, I mean, in your mind, what would you say really differentiates Stanlib's multi-asset offering from some of our peer group? I mean, in what is such a large and competitive CISA category?
I mean, it's a really good question, because ultimately, you know, we don't have the insights, I think, that our clients have in terms of what other teams are doing. So, you know, it's very difficult to make an apples for apples comparison. But I think from what I've seen, and I speak under correction, and it's just one man's perspective, is that I think the first thing that maybe differentiates us a little bit is, you know, we do have a track record of success in different capabilities, whether it's absolute return investing, multi-strategy, or more recently in the multi-asset portfolios that we've taken over. I think that you mentioned JP Morgan, I do think that's a differentiator for us. But really, it's our thought process that equities aren't the only driver of returns, that you need to manage risk across a plethora of assets. And if you look after the risks, which comes from our background a little bit in hedge funds and absolute return investing, the upside will ultimately take care of itself. But what we think we do better or differently is we focus quite a lot on risk, the pathway of returns, so the volatility of returns, and we're generally trying to give our investors a smooth the glide path, if you like. Yes, we are approaching the world from a much more top-down perspective than I think the typical South African multi-asset investor or balanced fund utilizes, where they really lean heavily on the equity component and bottom-up equity. The use of quantitative techniques in our team and across our business is something we've talked about before. But ultimately, you know, we're trying to deliver something with less correlation. We are trying to go and harvest returns in places that we wouldn't ordinarily find them. So I'll give you an example. You know, recently instituted some aggressive cash positioning in a place like Egypt, where the yield pickup is enormous post the devaluation of the currency. And so we aren't afraid of taking risk, and ultimately different risks that we think we're going to be rewarded with, rather than just waiting for equities to give you a return, which may not always happen, right? And we've seen that through the last few years, where South African equities have struggled, emerging market equities have struggled, even Chinese equities have struggled despite the fantastic GDP. So maybe we've got some different viewpoints, but ultimately we're trying to achieve the same thing as our competitors, and we're trying to deliver for our clients, as are all our competitors. Everyone's approaching this with the client's best interests at heart. The way we go about it is just top down and trying to manage the volatility of returns, but ultimately we do need to deliver a competitive return stream that sets ourselves aside from the peer group, both from a risk perspective as well as from a return perspective. But ultimately we're here to make money for our clients, and we believe we're well set up, well staffed, well resourced, both within the standard for infrastructure as well as our kind of a relationship with JP Morgan to deliver upon that. And then, you know, relative to historically where, you know, the relationship with Columbia Threadneedle has been much more of a take what Threadneedle give us. Here, hopefully you've heard how closely the teams work together. So it's one investment team really delivering a holistic client experience and a holistic portfolio ultimately to the client, and my team and I being 100% accountable for the return profile and the risk profile in the portfolios.
To our listeners today, we hope that you found this insightful and it gave you some interesting things to consider when thinking about multi-asset investing. If you'd like to further the discussion, please reach out to myself or your Standard representative, or visit the Standard Insights portal.